wasteland after the zombie apocalypse. When I was younger, it was a way to cope with my anxiety. I guess I thought that if I was smart and prepared, nothing could hurt me. But recently, it's become more fantasy than nightmare. I want to use the skills I've developed. And not just to save my life, but to create a brand new one. I'm ready to start over, to devote myself to something that matters, instead of staying here, floundering in a world that fits me as badly as my new shirts. Lauren continues. It's also essential that your personality complements the other members of your team. She glances back down at her tablet. You scored a 91 in empathy, which is good, but suggests that you might have a difficult time sacrificing an individual for the good of the group if necessary. My stomach lurches at the word sacrifice. I remember some of the terrible questions the psychologist asked me. What would I do if we started to run out of oxygen during the trip? What if none of the seeds we brought were viable? How much medicine would we give to someone who was close to death? Your overall leadership score is only 68, though that's not a huge concern, as long as we balance the team properly. And, let's see, problem solving, 91, patience, 57. That one could be a problem, but certainly not a deal breaker. Flexibility, 82. She goes down the list, and I do my best to maintain a neutral expression. It's not the most fun thing in the world, being analyzed like this. But it's got nothing on the 534,656 comments on VidHub. Lauren places her tablet on the table, then turns to look straight at me. After this, you'll complete your last evaluation, and then the committee will meet to make their final selections. So, Philip, I'm going to ask you one more time. You're sure you're ready for a one-way mission to Mars? Images flash through my head. Saying a tearful goodbye to my parents, joking with the reporters at the launch, knowing that it doesn't matter what awkward things I say because I won't be around to see people making fun of me online afterward. Climbing those stairs, strapping into my seat, and feeling the violent rumble of the rockets. Watching Earth fall away and the sky fade as the windows fill with stars. Knowing that the next time I set foot on solid ground, it'll be in a world without oxygen, but also one without VidHub followers, where only intelligence and bravery will matter. I'm absolutely sure. I meet with a different psychologist this time, James. He's a cheerful, youngish guy with dreadlocks, wearing a tie and the kind of immaculately pressed shirt I'm pretty sure you only get from having a team of house elves dress you every morning. As we explained during your previous briefing, the final evaluation is a test to see how well you deal with isolation and boredom, and how you get along with others in close quarters. He lets out a small laugh. The shuttle is going to feel pretty small during the 6-month journey. I'll be sure to pack deodorant, I say, wincing slightly when James gives me what I refer to as a courtesy smile. Okay then, follow me. He guides me down a series of hallways, the last of which leads to a set of frosted glass doors with the words Isolation Chamber etched onto them. Did you guys build this just for this mission? I ask, trying not to let any hint of apprehension creep into my voice. Being stuck in a small space is one thing. Being alone with my thoughts for 24 hours is another. James shakes his head. We use this to evaluate all members of the space program. Though it's a little different this time. We're putting you guys in there two at a time to see how you interact during a stressful situation. What's stressful about sitting in a room for 24 hours? When was the last time you sat in a room doing nothing for 1 hour? No phone, no computer, no TV. I think you're underestimating teenagers. We might be addicted to technology, but we're also lazy. This sounds like a vacation to me. It sounds like a dream, actually. I've spent the past few weeks staring at my phone like it's a bomb that's about to explode. Or rather, a bomb that's already exploded and will continue to do so indefinitely. James raises an eyebrow. I'm not speaking from my experience with teenagers. I'm speaking from my experience with human beings.
Everyone all set?
A cheery voice calls. It's Tessa, the other psychologist. When I see who she's walking with, my stomach lurches. It's the blonde girl from the reception area. Philip, this is Blythe, one of the other finalists. You're going to spend 24 hours in the isolation chamber together so we can see how you work together as a team. We've met, Blythe says, grinning at me. He accused me of pushing drugs. What? No. I sputter, blushing as I catch James giving me a strange look. That's not what happened. Well, this is already off to an interesting start, Tessa says with a smile. She waves her badge over the sensor on the wall, and the doors hiss open. The isolation chamber is a tiny square room that looks like a futuristic jail cell. It's completely bare except for two padded benches wedged against the walls, and a metal table with two large bottles of water and a stack of protein bars. We file inside, filling the space between the two benches. Bathroom's right there, Tessa says, pointing at a room the size of an airplane lavatory. I make a mental note to go easy on the water. And the protein bars, for that matter. Tessa and James go back outside to make room for a medical technician, who hooks me and Blythe up to sensors to track our heart rates and brain activity. I don't want any of you to be shocked when you start reading my mind, Blythe jokes as the technician places a sensor against her temple. So you should know that there's always a part of my brain writing Harry Potter slash. She doesn't look like the type of girl I imagine staying home on Saturday nights to write Harry Potter erotica. She looks like she belongs on the dance floor of some underground club, dancing wildly to a band I've never heard of. I can imagine her hair flying, her hips swaying. Get it together, I tell myself as I feel my pulse begin to speed up at the thought. Thank God I'm not hooked up to the heart rate monitor yet. I take a few deep breaths and regain my composure before it's my turn to get wired up. You're all set, Tessa says a few minutes later, after the technician leaves. If you need anything, you can press the red call button by the door. Otherwise, we'll see you in 24 hours. See ya, Blythe calls cheerfully while I nod, wondering how the hell I'm supposed to get through 24 hours without saying anything dumb. The door slides closed, and all the lights go out except for a dim recessed bulb in the ceiling. Blythe flings herself onto one of the benches with a loud sigh, and I sit gingerly on the edge of the other, wishing there were a little more space between us. So how many times have you done this? She asked, turning onto her back and stretching out her legs. There's something strangely intimate about seeing a girl lie down like that. Done this? I repeat. Been in the isolation chamber? Yeah, this is my third time. Oh, I pause. This is my first time. I wonder what that means. Whether she's ahead of me in the rankings or whether it's just a scheduling issue. Who are the others? The other people, I mean. The first was a girl named Maddie. She was really nice. At least, I think she was nice. She didn't talk very much. I wonder how Blythe is going to describe me after this. He seemed nice. At least, I think he was nice. He didn't talk much except to make awkward jokes about drugs. The second time was with this guy, Jordan. He thought the committee was listening and analyzing everything we said, so he refused to talk about anything but chemistry, physics, or astronomy. I'd be like, hey, Jordan, can you pass me a protein bar? And he'd be like, did you know that this protein bar would only weigh half an ounce on Mars? The gravitational force is only 38% as strong as Earth's. So they're not listening to what we say? I ask, wondering if perhaps this Jordan kid was onto something. I can't afford to mess this up. They probably are, but I don't think it's to see how much Mars trivia we can drop in conversation. They want to see our interpersonal skills, how we deal with boredom and stress and stuff. She jumps to her feet suddenly. Do you want to have a dance contest? What? No. Just the thought of dancing in front of another person makes my heart race, which kind of sucks because now the committee is going to think I'm not comfortable in small places, which is really unfair because I'm not claustrophobic, and I doubt dance parties are going to be part of the Mars mission, unless Blythe is also selected. Why not? Blythe raises her arms over her head and sways her hips from side to side. It's not quite as sexy as the move I'd imagined, but much cuter. I suppress a smile. Well, for one, there is no music.
Oh, that's not a problem.
She clears her throat, tosses her head back, and starts to sing loudly and off-key.
I'd stop the world and melt with you.
She continues to shake her hips and wave her arms while she sings, and despite myself, I laugh.
What is that?
I ask.
It's modern English.
What?
Don't you like 80s music?
No, not particularly.
That's probably because you haven't listened to enough,
she says, flopping back on the bench, slightly breathless. I wouldn't have pegged you for an 80s music fan.
Why? What would you have pegged me as?
Blythe asks eagerly, sitting up again. I stiffen, realizing too late that I've sent us down a road with too many conversational landmines.
Nothing. I don't know. Sorry, that was dumb.
No, tell me. I'm curious.
I don't know. I guess I assumed you listened to cool indie stuff.
Like the Starfish Amputees?
Maybe. I've never heard of them.
Yes! She reaches out to give me a high five. Confused, I tap my palm against hers. What did I do?
The Starfish Amputees are a made-up band. It's a game I play to see whether people are posers or not.
Isn't that kind of mean? I ask hesitantly.
I don't think so. I never call them out on it or anything. I'm not trying to embarrass anyone. I'd just like to know, for myself.
I guess that's fair. So, what are your favorite fake bands?
Oh, there are so many, it's hard to choose.
She holds up her hand and begins counting off with her fingers.
There's the Amphibious Gentlemen, the Hip Hip Hoorays, Baking Soda Stars, Toadstool, Third Grade Talent Show.
She shakes her head.
They were so good until they sold out.
I don't know. I really like that Christmas album they did. The one with the guitarist from Dead Posers Society.
Good one.
My eyes have adjusted to the dim light enough that I can see her smile. And the sight turns my stomach from a solid into a liquid, just for a moment.
That's one thing I'm going to miss,
she says wistfully.
Going to shows. That moment when the band you've been waiting for all night comes onto the stage, and their opening chords release something inside of you.
She sighs.
I don't think there's a better feeling in the world. When the bass kicks in, and you can't tell if it's coming from the speakers or your own heart, and you know everyone else feels the same way, and you're all connected by the music.
I don't say anything. I've never been to a concert, so I don't know that moment she's talking about. And if I'm chosen for the mission, I probably never will. But that's okay. There's a lot I'm going to miss out on, but plenty more terrible things I'm going to avoid.
Are you okay?
Blythe asks.
Yeah, I'm fine,
I say quickly. So why do you want to leave then? I hear the music scene on Mars is pretty quiet. She shrugs, but there's something forced about the gesture.
Some things are worth sacrificing for.
She lets out a long breath.
Okay, instead of talking about the things we're going to miss, I think we should list the things we're happy to leave behind. I'll start. Let's see. Mosquitoes.
Really? I say. That's the best you can come up with, mosquitoes?
It's the first thing I thought of. I have more, but now it's your turn.
All right, okay, the typing dots.
Like when you're texting?
Blythe asks.
Yeah, I'm not going to miss seeing those dots and that knot you get in your stomach when they go on for too long and you know the person you're texting keeps deleting their message and starting over. I hadn't really thought about that, but yeah, I guess we won't be texting anymore.
Just good old face-to-face contact.
Or helmet-to-helmet contact,
Blythe says,
if we're outside. Okay, it's my turn. I'm not going to miss unloading the dishwasher.
Shopping.
Hay fever.
Dancing. Blythe laughs.
No way I'm giving up dancing. You can do whatever you want, but no one's going to make me feel guilty about not dancing. No more bar mitzvahs, quinceañeras, sweet 16s, weddings. Sounds like you've had quite the busy social life. I've been very busy awkwardly standing on the edge of the dance floor, pretending to check my phone, I say.
We're definitely not leaving awkwardness behind.
What could be more awkward than living on top of 6 strangers? Lots of things. Trust me. In the dim light, I see Blythe's expression change.
Like what?
She asks softly. My heart starts pounding a warning. Don't tell her. This is my best chance at a fresh start. I can't ruin it now. Not this early. I force a smile. Nothing. I was just making a joke. A stupid one, I guess.
Can I ask you a personal question?
She asks. I nod.
Who are you most worried about leaving behind?
My parents, I say, as something deep inside my chest cramps.
What about you?
My grandmother. But she's really old, so I'm not sure how much time we would have together anyway. I know she'd be proud of me if I'm chosen, but I can't imagine saying goodbye to her.
What about your parents?
They both died when I was little.
Oh, I say, I'm so sorry. She gives another one of her practiced shrugs.
Too fewer people I'll make cry if I leave.
Yeah, I say quietly. I've never seen my parents cry, but when I told them I'd made it to the final round, there was a look in their eyes I never want to see again. Something worse than tears. Like I'd yanked on the threads holding their hearts together and broken them somehow. That's one thing I'm ready to leave behind.
What, crying?
Blythe asks.
Letting people down, I guess. We're both lying down on our benches now. There's only about 2 feet of space between us. I don't think I've even lain this close to a girl before.
A shrill, piercing wail rips apart the silence. I gasp and jump to my feet, heart racing. Blythe lets out a yelp and also jumps up, but she loses her footing and crashes into me. I put my arm around her to steady her.
What the hell is that?
I mutter.
It's a fire alarm,
Blythe says, lurching toward the door. There's no handle on this side, so she bangs on it a few times.
We have to get out of here.
I hurry to stand next to her.
It's okay, just relax. It's probably just a false alarm. And if it's a real fire, they'll come get us.
No one's going to forget about us. She keeps banging on the door and pressing the call button, as if she hasn't heard me.
Let us out! Let us out!
Blythe, I say, speaking her name aloud for the first time.
It's all right. You need to calm down. There's no smoke. The door isn't hot. Everything's okay.
It's probably just a drill.
There is, there is!
She spins around again and resumes banging on the door with one hand and pressing the call button with the other.
Why isn't anyone answering?
I take a breath, and I can smell it now. Smoke. Slowly, so as not to panic Blythe, I stand up and walk around the tiny room, sniffing. It's not coming through the door, and I don't see any vents.
You smell it now, don't you?
There's no accusation in her voice, only fear.
Yeah, I smell it. But there's no reason to freak out. This is a brand new building. It'll have state-of-the-art sprinklers and fire doors. We're going to be fine. We're going to die in here,
she says, her voice breaking. Without thinking, I pull her toward me and wrap my arms around her.
No, we're not. I promise.
I whisper into her ear. She's trembling, so I tighten my hold. But I can't ignore the fact that the smoke is growing stronger. I look around the dark room, desperately scanning it for something to use to break the door. But there's nothing. That's the point of an isolation chamber. That's when it hits me. This is part of the test. It has to be.
That's the only explanation for why they've left us in here with the alarm blaring.
The smoke isn't from a real fire. They just want to see how we'll cope.
This is part of the test, I say. I try to take a step back so I can look, but she holds on tighter.
We just need to relax, to show them that we don't panic in emergencies. It's all going to be okay. But the smoke, the fire's coming closer.
She's right about the smoke. It's not just the smell anymore. Real smoke is filling the room, burning my throat every time I inhale. But I know it's all being carefully monitored. There are people watching our vital signs. They're not going to let anything happen to us. I lead Blythe over to the bench and lower her onto it.
They're just trying to scare us, I say. Are you sure?
She asks, trembling against me.
I'm sure. All we have to do is stay calm.
I run my hand up and down her arm, and after a few moments, she stops shaking. The alarm stops suddenly, leaving a ringing in my ears. Slowly, the smoke starts to dissipate.
You were right,
Blythe says, letting out a long sigh.
Thank God.
I realize my hand is still on her arm. Sorry, I say, jerking it away.
Sorry for what?
She tilts her head back to look up at me.
For, I don't know.
Sorry, just forget it. Blythe sits up and tucks her legs underneath her, but doesn't move away. Her knees are touching my thigh.
Philip, are you all right?
Yeah, I'm fine, totally fine.
Why did touching me make you freak out?
What? I didn't. It didn't. My heart thuds frantically, and I try to turn away, but she puts her hand on my face and gently brings it back around.
Tell me.
I feel the warmth from her fingers seep through my skin, melting something inside me. She traces my cheek with her hand.
You can tell me.
And to my surprise, I do. At first, I can't make it through a whole sentence without stammering or stumbling. It's like my body is clinging to the words, and I have to drag them up through my throat one at a time. But after a few minutes, the words start to pour out of their own accord. I tell Blythe about the girl I'd liked since middle school, Ava. How I somehow worked up the nerve to ask her to prom. I explain that I was so nervous, my palms were too sweaty to hold my phone, which dropped and broke in front of Ava before I'd even had a chance to say a word. I tell her how I managed to stammer my question, kind of, how it took 3 tries for Ava to understand what I was saying, the pained look that crossed her face when she said no, like I just asked her to do something revolting, how to my horror a wave of nausea crashed over me, and I end up throwing up in the trash can, right next to Ava's locker. Blythe doesn't say anything. She just takes my hand and squeezes it as I speak. Of course, someone filmed the whole thing and put it on VidHub. I'm sure you saw it, I say, then continue before she has a chance to respond. Everyone's seen it. I remember exactly where I was when I realized what had happened. I was sitting in the kitchen, having a snack, when my friend Alex sent me the link to the video. It was just a few hours old, but it already had more than 20,000 views. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't move. All I could do was stare as the view count skyrocketed. It hit 50,000 before I got up from the table. And the comments. Thousands of people calling me a loser, telling me I was going to be a virgin for the rest of my life. But that wasn't the worst part. It was the memes. My face was everywhere. I couldn't go online without seeing a photo of myself throwing up into that trash can. By the next week, there were over 10 million views, and it was all anyone at school could talk about, even some of the teachers. I drew in a shaky breath. I couldn't sleep, couldn't even get out of bed. Eventually, I stopped going to school. My parents tried everything, bribes, threats, promises. Then, about 2 weeks after the incident, I heard about the Mars mission.
I'm so sorry that happened to you,
she says, tightening her grip on my hand.
People will move on eventually. They always do.
I shake my head. Not soon enough. Not before I go to college. Can you imagine trying to make it through freshman orientation? I heard there's a mural of me somewhere at Princeton.
So don't go to Princeton. They're all dicks anyway.
You know what I mean. Besides, it's not just because it went viral. I've always known there was something wrong with me. I just didn't expect the entire world to find out all at once. As the words leave my mouth, something in my chest cracks, releasing a wave of pain. "No, Philip, no," Blythe says, her voice soft. She wraps her arm around me, and I lean into her. "There's nothing wrong with you. Nothing." Her face brightens. "You know what I think you should do? You should make a response video." Just the thought of making a video makes me feel clammy and nauseous all at once. "I know you're some kind of genius, but that's actually the worst idea I've ever heard in my entire life." "I'm serious. It'd be really powerful. You can make a statement about not living in fear, how it's better to fail than never try at all." "Yeah, maybe. I'll think about it," I say, to get her off the subject. But I know there's no chance in hell of me ever doing something like that. "What about you? Why would a girl with every opportunity on earth leave it all behind?
I saw you on all those talk shows when you were younger.
Everyone who meets you loves you." To my surprise, her face falls and she shifts away from me. "I don't know. I know this sounds weird, but it just hurts too much," she says quietly. "What do you mean? Are you talking about your parents?" Blythe shakes her head. "No. I mean, watching what we're doing to the earth. What does it matter whether we can clean up oil spills if the ice caps have all melted?" "That's ridiculous," I say. "If you care so much about the environment, you have to stay and fight. You can't give up." "I don't see it as giving up. I have the chance to help build a brand new society on an untouched planet. This time we have the chance to do something right, and I want to be a part of it." I stare at her, sifting through the countless arguments popping up in my head. But as I catch sight of the sparkle in her eyes, the words fall away. This is what she wants, what she's decided. "They'll be lucky to have you," I say, smiling. Besides, the last thing I want to do is convince her to pull out. Blythe takes my hand. "They'll be lucky to have you. I just wanted to make sure you're in it for the right reasons." "You mean not as a way to get out of prom?" She cocks her head to the side. "Well, if we're both selected, we can organize the first ever prom on Mars." "I am not traveling 259 million miles to join the Martian prom committee. Besides, it'd be pretty pointless without music." "I can take care of that." Blythe grins at me, then starts to sing the same terrible song she butchered earlier. "I'd stop the world and melt with you," she croons before moving on to the next verse. Still holding her hand, I stand up and pull Blythe to her feet. She gives me a confused look, but doesn't stop singing. Without saying a word, I wrap my arms around her waist and begin to sway in time to the music. She finishes the song, then rests her head on my shoulder. "You're less terrible at dancing than you lead people to believe." "Maybe I just need some practice," I whisper into her ear. "I suppose that's one way to stay busy on a 250 million mile journey." She lifts her head up to look at me, though it might be hard in zero gravity. "Only one way to find out." I tighten my hold and then lift her off the ground, spinning her through the air while she laughs. I don't know exactly how it happens. I guess the dancing tires us out, because at some point we collapse onto one of the benches, breathing heavily. We eventually fall asleep like that, curled around each other on the narrow bench. The only way for both of us to fit is for me to wedge myself between the edge of the bench and the wall, but I don't care. I feel like I could stay like this forever, even if the entire left side of my body has gone numb. When the lights go on, we have just enough time to disentangle ourselves and stand up before the door slides open. "Hello again," Lauren says cheerfully. "Everyone okay in here?" I exchange a quick glance with Blythe. "Yeah, all good," I say.
"Great." James smiles. "We're just going to take each of you off for a quick debriefing, and then you'll be on your way." Blythe turns to me. Her hair is rumpled, and there's more eyeliner under her eyes than on the lids. She looks beautiful. I'll see you later, she says. I nod. Yeah, see you later. But I don't want to wait another 4 months to see her. So as Lauren starts to lead her away, I call out, Hey, Blythe! She turns around. Want to get coffee or something after this? She smiles, and warmth floods my chest. Yeah, that'd be great. I try to rein in the manic smile threatening to take over my face. Great. I'll meet you outside. James leads me away in the opposite direction, and a few minutes later I'm seated at the long table in the conference room again, except this time only Lauren is there. You did very well in the isolation room, she says as soon as I've lowered myself into the chair. Thanks. Fire simulation was pretty brutal, though. I know. But it's essential that we see how you perform under pressure, as I believe you figured out fairly early. She gives me a knowing smile before glancing down at her tablet. Of course, the real test was to see how you and Blythe worked together, and I'm pleased to say that our predictions were entirely correct. You two complement each other perfectly. Your dynamic is exactly what we're looking for on the team. Excitement fizzes through my chest. Oh my God, I think. This is it. I did it. We did it. I'm going to Mars. Blythe and I are going to Mars. I don't think my smile can get any wider. Oh dear, Lauren says quickly. I suppose I should have been clearer. I apologize. While you're a very strong candidate, Philip, I'm afraid you weren't selected for the mission. Her words land like a punch to the gut, knocking the air out of me. But you just said... I trail off. Yes, it's a difficult situation. You see, we can't just think about the group dynamic for this mission. We have to think about how the new colonists will interact with the team we sent 6 months ago. There's a young man on that team we think will do well to balance out Blythe's exuberance, but we wanted to make sure before we made our final selection. Luckily, you and he have nearly the exact same personality markers, so we figured you'd be a good test case. The air still hasn't returned to my lungs. I can't talk. I can't breathe. The room starts to spin, and I place my hands on the table for balance. So, I was never a real candidate? I finally croak. Oh, no, of course you were. You made it all the way to the penultimate round, but we only brought you in for this round so we could keep evaluating Blythe. Sorry to mislead you. We very much appreciated having you here. We couldn't have chosen Blythe without you. She should be very grateful. I take a deep breath. Can I tell her all this when I see her? We're meeting after this. Lauren shakes her head sadly. Oh dear, I'm sorry, Philip. Blythe's on her way to the shuttle. Tessa put her on the helicopter a few minutes ago. In a daze, I stumble through the rest of my brief conversation with Lauren, then manage to make it out of the building before I collapse onto a bench. My heart is beating so fast I can barely catch my breath. The words, she's gone, echo through my head. She's going to Mars, and I'm never going to see her again. I know, rationally, we only spent 24 hours together, but something happened in that room. We had a real connection. We had real potential. My heart cramps as I imagine all the things we'll never do together. Exchanging wondrous looks as we stare out the shuttle window, taking in the dizzying beauty of space. Holding gloved hands as we step out of the craft and set foot on a foreign planet for the first time. Laughing and exploring and dreaming and... My phone buzzes. For one brief moment, I think it's her. She could have asked for my number. She would have wanted to say goodbye. My stomach plummets. It's my mom. How'd it go? I'll wait until I get home. I want to see her face when I tell her I'm not going. That's one good thing, I guess. The chance to see her crying happy tears for once. I let out a sigh and tilt my head back. It's a beautiful, sunny spring day. The sky is an uninterrupted stretch of clear blue. There are no clouds, no helicopters. Blythe is already gone.
If I'd been chosen, I'd be on the helicopter with her. I can picture the two of us huddled next to each other, giddy with excitement as we learn about the next stage of our adventure. The mission was the only thing getting me out of bed in the morning. It's what gave me the strength to go back to school to face the cloud of laughs and whispers that followed me everywhere. What the hell was I supposed to do now? Finish my homework? Apply to college where I'll spend the next 4 years watching girls cringe when they pass me? There's nothing wrong with you. Nothing. Even if she wasn't lying, there aren't other girls like Blythe out there. Most girls would rather make out with a garbage can than with me. I would know. About a million of them said so online. I feel the familiar prickle of morbid curiosity, the same one that compels you to stare out the window when you pass roadkill. I want to know how many views it's up to. I need to know if the entire planet has now seen the video twice, or if once was enough. Before I can stop myself, I've pulled it up. 20 million views. Awesome. I scroll to the most recent comment and brace myself with a jolt of fury or shame I know is coming. But to my surprise, it's not a terrible comment. I can tell right away because the cruelest ones are always written in all caps. Philip is adorable. I'm kicking myself for not kissing him when I had the chance. He's destined for great things. I know it. I jump to my feet. As I'm standing there, staring dumbstruck at my phone, another new comment pops up. I wish he'd make his own video. I'm about to go on a pretty scary trip and need something inspiring to watch. The username is I Speak Modern English. Everything in my body turns fizzy, every cell tingling. I need to write back. Even if it means 10 million people are going to fill the rest of the thread with cruel comments. But then I hear her voice in my head, clearer than I've heard anything before. You can make a statement about not living in fear, how it's better to fail than never try at all. I take a deep breath and let my finger hover over the most terrifying button on VidHub. Go live. Just pretend she's the only one watching, I tell myself, pressing it. A light starts blinking, and to my surprise, a strange feeling of calm washes over me. Hi, everyone, I say. According to the number on the screen, more than 10,000 people are watching. My name's Philip. I figured it was time for you to meet me, the real me. So, here I am. So hello to everyone out there who's watching, whether you're in the U.S., Asia, Europe, wherever, or even if you're on Mars, I pause and smile. Especially if you're on Mars.
Something Real by Julie Murphy. Read by Kyla Garcia. Have you ever been on TV before, June? Daria asks, as she brushes a matte coral blush along the line of my cheek where a cheekbone would go if mine protruded. Mm-mm. I practically grunt, trying my very best to tell her no, but also be still, because I've never had my makeup professionally done, and I can only imagine it involves staying perfectly still. Daria, the lanky Asian makeup artist, is one of those human beings who looks like she's not wearing makeup and probably doesn't even own a hairdryer, but for whatever reason, she's been entrusted with the job of preparing my face for camera, and rightfully so. The girl is damn good at her job. With my rosy cheeks and double chin that not even obscenely overpriced foundation can hide, I look like an airbrushed cherubic version of myself. All that's missing are wings and a bow and arrow. Okay, but really, self-deprecation aside, I look pretty amazing. She added a touch of bronzer, too, that suddenly made me look much more like my father's daughter than I ever had before. I'm the result of my Irish mom and my Mexican dad. Somehow I ended up with all mom's complexion genes, while my brother is a more natural mix of the two. Daria shields my eyes as she sprays my curls with a sugary sweet hairspray before brushing out every last light brown ringlet into glamorous waves that look as foreign on me as a football helmet. Impressive, I say. Daria winks. The power of transformation. The trailer door swings open, as a production assistant rushes inside and guides a stomping girl to the chair next to me.
Here's the other one, says the PA.
Do we have an ETA on Dylan? Daria asks. The PA shares a meaningful glance with Daria's reflection in the mirror.
We're gonna get some intro film on these two for now.
Dylan. I have to remind myself to breathe. For the first time, I glance over to the other girl, and it is immediately apparent that I don't have a chance in hell. The other girl wears thick-soled Doc Martens and fishnet stockings seamed up the back. Her midnight blue crushed velvet baby doll dress swishes around green bean-like thighs. Her long white blonde hair is streaked with black and sits piled into a sloppy bun on top of her head. On me, her whole look would look like I got in a cage fight with a clearance rack at Hot Topic. But on her, it works. Really well. The girl is the exact opposite of me in every way. But worst of all, she's my competition. 3 years ago, I would have been the person flipping through channels at home, briefly landing on A Date Come True and snickering at the contestants for a moment, before settling on reruns of The Simpsons, King of the Hill, or Bob's Burgers. If I were religious or whatever, my holy trinity would be Lisa Simpson, Bobby Hill, and Tina Belcher. But all that was before Dylan. His legal name is Timothy Dylan Wachowski, but when his manager discovered him and his tiny little garage band, he became a solo act simply known as Dylan. To be honest, his name could be Wallflower Zambino Bubba, and my love for him would still be just as endless. I've had plenty of crushes, but none of them compare to the pain that is falling in love with someone's every word, every note, and feeling like they can both fix you and break you all in one song without you ever having even met them. Not once. It's the kind of pain you've either got to shut out entirely or embrace completely. I guess you can call me a glutton for punishment. Or you can just refer to me by my official title, June Smith, President and founder of the official Dylan Fan Club International. Yeah, I've got it bad. Which is why I didn't even have to try out for A Date Come True, a show where totally normal, achingly average-looking people compete for dates with their most beloved celebs. Nope, the producers went to the pain of tracking me down. And no matter how hard I tried, I couldn't say no. I guess now is as good a time as any for you two to meet, says Daria, as the door swings shut behind the PA. June, this is Martha. Martha, this is June. I lift my gaze to say hello via the mirror. Martha turns to me, though, before glancing into the mirror. Awkwardness explodes in my chest. Why didn't I just turn to her instead of insisting on communicating via our reflections? Why didn't I say hi immediately the moment she walked into the trailer? Hi, I finally sputter. Hello, she responds, her voice cool. And I don't mean hip. I mean even and self-possessed. So you're the competition then? Heat spreads beneath my skin, and I wonder how long it will take for the blotchiness to surface above Daria's amazing makeup. If I'm this much of a mess just meeting the other girl, what's gonna happen when they put me in front of Dylan? But then Martha smiles at me, with her lips still pressed together, and something about her expression soothes me. I guess so, she says. She shrugs. Maybe we've already won just by being here, though. If I close my eyes, her voice feels like warm water being poured on my head. Like when you're getting your hair cut and the stylist presses the nozzle of the shampoo bowl right against your scalp. Daria clears her throat. Martha was one of 60,000 girls who tried out. Wow, I breathe. And I hear you didn't even have to audition, says Martha. Sounds like a head start to me. I laugh a little too deeply. Trust me, I'm gonna need all the advantages I can get. Martha smiles into the mirror, and it's easy to forget for a moment that she's my competition
and that tons of production people are waiting outside to film me in all my awkward glory. As I meet Dylan. The Dylan. Oh my God. I watch as Daria freshens up Martha's face, but just barely. Martha's bone structure alone has already done half the work for her. I force myself to really study my transformation in the mirror. For a moment, the smallest bit of logic nudges its way into my brain, and I realize that Dylan has no idea who I am. Well, other than what they tell him. But besides that, I can be whoever I want to be. He doesn't know the girl who showed up here this morning in leggings and a baggy fleece with uneven skin and frizzy hair and a double chin. All he'll ever know is the finished product. The perfectly made-up face and the lush waves cascading over my shoulders. There's no hiding the double chin, but to be honest, I don't hate it all that much to begin with. When I walk out of this trailer, Dylan will see the upgraded version of me in my long-sleeve navy maxi dress and suede booties. So maybe you can't take the awkward out of the girl, but you sure can hide it. Okay, shouts Jill, a petite white lady and the head producer on set. She's the one who reached out to me about the show in the first place. She wears all black and is barely tall enough to hop into her director's chair sitting across from me. But her voice compensates for whatever she lacks in stature. We're gonna get some intro footage. June's first. Everyone, shut the hell up. Daria fusses with my hair once more, twisting my waves so they frame my face just so.
Five, says the burly cameraman just behind Jill's shoulder. Four, three, two, and action.
Jill clears her throat. June, we're going to ask a few questions. You'll look just over my shoulder the whole time at Zeke behind me. Got it? I nod. Four cameras are trained on me, ready to capture me at every angle, which is only slightly horrifying. I have to squint to see beyond the looming lights that feel like the heat lamps my brother uses for his pet lizard, Ralph. Just beyond Jill, Daria hovers with her belt full of brushes, and a few feet behind her sits Martha, who offers me a short wave. Now we'll edit my prompts and questions out so it just looks like you're talking to the camera. If you fumble, just start over or pick up where you left off. The magic happens in the cutting room. I nod, trying not to focus on how dry my mouth suddenly is. So tell us about your role with Dylan's official fan club.
Well, I started the Dylan fan club. And at first, it was just a message board, and not really anything serious or official. And this was back when Dylan was just beginning to get big hits on YouTube. So when he got picked up by Galaxy, his label, they reached out and asked if I'd be interested in making things official. And before you know it, we've got chapters all over the world, and a really intense site with everything from a merch store to a fanfic archive. Jill nods. And I think her smile is telling me that I am not totally bombing this thing. Now, I hope you don't take any offense to this, but you seem really normal.
Behind her, Martha laughs. My eye catches hers, and I laugh too.
Well, I am normal, I think. I mean, would I even know if I wasn't? I guess I'm my own normal.
Jill smiles, but this time it's not in an encouraging way.
No, no, I just meant, you don't strike me as the fangirl type. You know, I've been producing this show since season one, and we've seen it all, so it's just refreshing. And I'm kind of wondering what made you start the fan club, if you wouldn't mind talking a little about that.
Well, Dylan did covers for a while, at least at first. And I was into his sound and stuff, but it was his first original song that really got to me. Me Against the World. Those lyrics, they were like immediately seared into my brain. It was almost like all the words in that song existed inside of me. But Dylan had somehow grouped them all together and sorted them out. And not only that, but he could freaking sing. That video of him in his dad's basement. Just acoustic, nothing fancy.
I would turn that song on and close all the curtains in my room and just lie there in the dark. I should have felt so alone, but I didn't. And I wanted that feeling all the time. But Dylan's one person. I laugh a little. I'm not some psycho who's going to stalk him at his house. So I decided to find people who felt just as alone as I did. I guess I just thought we could be alone together. Or maybe, just maybe, we'd find that we weren't all that alone to begin with. I stop for a moment to let Jill speak, but her eyes are wide, and she's just nodding me along. So, I guess I don't really come across as the type of person who would start a fan club, but I think we'd all surprise ourselves to find out what lengths we might go to recreate and savor the moments that make us feel like we have purpose. There's no shame in that. Good, Jill says, her whole body leaning in. Now, paint me the picture of your perfect date with Dylan. At the mention of his name, my whole body tingles. Well, I gulp loudly, and suddenly the cameras and the lights all feel so warm. I love divey little restaurants that look like they can barely pass health inspection, but are actually, like, really good and authentic. And then maybe Dylan would take me to see his favorite band that no one's even heard of yet. I mean, of course I'd love for Dylan himself to play me something on the beach or something crazy. But I think that what the last few years have really taught me is that there's something really telling about the music someone else shares with you. Wow, says Jill. Kid, you're a natural. All right, Martha, she shouts. Your turn. I stand up and Daria squeezes my elbow before whispering in my ear. You probably didn't notice, but the whole damn crew was hanging on your every word, and we don't impress easy. I think you got this date in the bag. I turn to her, my whole face lighting up. Dylan will see that? How does he even decide? Well, maybe, but the decision is more in the hands of the... Daria! Jill snaps. Let's get some powder. This girl's T-zone is lighting up like a runway. Daria grimaces and runs off toward Martha. With no one to guide me, I hop up into the empty director's chair behind Jill. I'm eager to get to know my competition. Okay, says Jill, in a voice so low I can barely hear. Just take it slow, and if this gets to be too much, we'll take a breather and pick back up again. You're in the driver's seat, just like I told you a few weeks back. She's been prepped for this? Immediately, I feel somehow threatened. I know this is just a dumb TV show and that none of this is real, but because at the heart of all this reality TV show bullshit is a real moment with Dylan, hopefully all to myself, for me to tell him how much his music means to me, and Martha seems to have some kind of connection with Jill, which I can only conclude is an upper hand. Jill continues. This is a vehicle for you to tell your and Marissa's story, okay? And I know it will mean so much to Dylan, too. Martha nods quickly. I'm ready. Martha, you have a special connection to Dylan, don't you? She takes a deep breath. I've never been the kind of person to dig through all this trash music on the internet to find the band no one's ever heard of. That's cool, if you're into that. But I guess my jam has always been more books and fashion. I can blow some serious cash on first edition Nancy Drew books and handmade jewelry. But Marissa, my older sister, she's one of those people that's always 10 steps ahead. Or she was. For a moment, Martha stares down into her lap as she wrings her hands together. She was the kind of person who was always dragging me to dinky little clubs to see bands she swore would be the next big thing. And sometimes she was right. In spite of myself, I can't help being a little bit mesmerized by Martha. I wish she wasn't the competition. It's not even that she's a threat. I just don't like the feeling of being pitted against her.
Jill nods.
Good. She sounds great. Was Marissa a big early fan of Dylan?
Oh, yeah.
She smiles, her eyes a bit glassy.
She loved that damn song.
Me Against the World? Asks Jill.
Yep. That's the one.
The silence that follows is heavy, like Jill's given some kind of cue that Martha hasn't picked up on or doesn't want to.
You said Marissa was?
What happened?
She was so stubborn. Our parents told her to go to community college for a semester or two to figure out what she wanted to do or where she wanted to go, but she couldn't see that logic. She wanted the experience of going to college. So my parents agreed to send her to Portsmouth, a little liberal arts college an hour outside the city. She was driving home for election day.
Election day? Asks Jill.
Yeah, my dad is one of those people who votes in every single election, like down to school boards and city treasurer. And it's sort of like programmed in us to vote and be really obnoxious about it, too. He was born and raised in Cuba, which means he didn't take civic responsibility lightly when he became a citizen.
That's sweet, Jill tells her in a too sugary voice.
Marissa was driving home to vote and to watch the results roll in. It was a midterm election, but lots of congressional seats, so our dad was, like, really geeking out. And it was Marissa's first time to vote. Dad bought fancy cupcakes, and my mom made some decorations, and even got some champagne for us all to share.
I'm hanging on her every word.
I know this has nothing to do with Dylan or his music or this stupid date we're competing for, but if Jill is out to make good TV, she knows how to get it done.
Wrong way driver, says Martha so simply. Like she said those exact words a dozen times before.
It was instant. She was gone. There was no pain. That's what the paramedics told us. I think that's supposed to make it better. And it's not like I wanted her to be in pain, but I kind of wonder if she would have preferred to know the end was coming. To just have a minute or two to prepare herself. She shakes her head, her gaze looking far past the camera now.
I think I've had too long to think about this now.
Jill nods sympathetically.
I'm so sorry, Martha.
Is your sister... Sounds like she was wonderful, by the way. Is she the reason you're here for a chance to meet Dylan?
Well, technology. It's either a burden or a curse. We were able to figure out what song she'd been listening to at the time of when it happened. And it was that song, Me Against the World. That's back when it wasn't even popular yet. So I didn't really think much of it other than that it was nice to just know what she was listening to. But then Dylan's career blew up, and that song, it was everywhere.
Wow. I imagine that must have been rather difficult for you.
Martha nods, her gaze unmoving. At first, it was miserable. I couldn't escape it. But it wasn't going anywhere. So I had to make the best of it. That meant being an optimist for once. Optimism was always Marissa's job. And I guess I just had to force myself to see the song as Marissa's way of always being there for me. Maybe that sounds cheesy, but it worked.
Perfect, Jill tells Martha. You're doing great. Now, one last thing. If you win this date with Dylan, what is it that you want to say? Look right at the camera.
Martha nods, gripping the armrests of her chair, and looks straight into the camera.
I'd tell him thank you. I'd say thank you for giving me Marissa's last gift. For giving me a way, a tangible way, to hold on to my sister forever.
Jill stands and begins to clap like a freaking maniac. Nausea washes over me as I'm reminded that this is just entertainment. Jill might as well be locked away in a writer's room orchestrating this whole thing via a script.